I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts of Vermont Edition, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. We saved you some time to get it right, so you only have the good stuff. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to the VPR and Vermont PBS debates. I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts of Vermont Edition. Today, we're bringing you the fifth debate in this season. It's all part of the VPR Vermont PBS coverage of statewide and federal elections ahead of the August 9th primary election. Today, it's Republican candidates running for lieutenant governor. Joining me live today in the Vermont PBS studio in downtown Winooski is Vermont State Senator Joe Benning of Lindenville. Senator Benning, welcome.
Good afternoon.
And joining us remotely because of our COVID protocols is former Rutland City Alderman and past Rutland City Republican Party Chair Gregory Thayer. Gregory, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So here's the format we'll use today and for the rest of the 2022 primary debates. In our first segment, I'll ask common questions to all of the candidates. They'll each have 60 seconds to answer, then short follow-up questions and answers are possible. In the second segment, the candidates will ask each other questions. Each candidate will be given 30 seconds to ask a question and 60 seconds to answer. Follow-ups are possible. Then we'll turn to a series of questions submitted by Vermonters. Candidates will have 30 seconds to answer. If we have time, and I'm pretty sure we will, we'll go to a lightning round of questions with very brief answers, 10 seconds or less. And we'll conclude with 1 minute closing statements from each candidate. So let's begin. We'll start with questions to both of you. Please limit your answers to 60 seconds or less. And a reminder, I may ask follow-up questions. In Vermont, the role of lieutenant governor, for lack of a better word, is ceremonial. The primary roles of the job are to preside over the Vermont Senate, cast tie-breaking votes in the Vermont State Senate, and become governor should something happen to the elected governor. Knowing all of this, why do you want to be lieutenant governor? Joe Benning, we'll start with you.
Well, thank you, Connor. The quick answer to that question in the 58 seconds I now have left is I've served in the Senate for 12 years. I love the institution. I have a working knowledge of the players inside it. I know what the roles are of each of them, and I know what the function is of the lieutenant governor. And one of the components, Connor, you left off. We actually, as lieutenant governor, are part of a committee on committees which officially appoints all of the players to their respective roles on committee assignments as well as chairs. I bring 12 years worth of institutional knowledge at a time when we are having one-third of the body turn over. And we're coming out of COVID-19, which has been very stressful on all of us. So having that working institutional knowledge and a desire to be continuing the institution that I consider to be the best in the state is why I'm running for lieutenant governor.
Senator Benning, you've been in the Vermont State Senate for more than a decade. You've been Senate Minority Leader. What do you want to be able to accomplish as lieutenant governor that you haven't been able to accomplish in the Senate?
One of the most frustrating things as a state senator is you know there is more out there that could be done to promote Vermont. This particular office is a golden opportunity. You described it as a ceremonial office. I don't see it that way. I see it as an opportunity to be Vermont's chief promoter, if you will. Everything about Vermont, from its people to its economy to its ecology, the opportunity is there for somebody to be a mouthpiece, and the lieutenant governor's position is that ideal spot.
Are there any particular issues right now that you are drawn to most when it comes to being the mouthpiece, as you said, as lieutenant governor?
Well, you have to remember that the position itself does not enable you to draft legislation or to go into committee and argue for legislation or to vote on it in committee or debate it on the floor. You are pretty limited in that regard. But the biggest issue for me right now is trying to support Phil Scott.
Gregory Thayer, let's go to you.
I understand the role of the lieutenant governor in his or her position under the Constitution, one of six constitutional offices in our state constitution. I will, be there to work hard for all the people. My campaign's about we the people, but I'm also going to take it a step further, and I'm going to do some of the things that Brian Doobie did. Brian Doobie, when he was lieutenant governor, he went out and he worked with other countries and businesses around the country, but a cow deal with Cuba and different agreements that he worked on with Canada. And I'm going to be that guy, like a promoter, and be positive. When I was on a city alderman in Rutland, I introduced a Market Rutland initiative, and we did with a group of us from the partnership and the redevelopment authority. We went out and we promoted Rutland. We had meetings in places in New York, Lenz Falls, Saratoga, Keene, New Hampshire. We went out and we met with business leaders in those communities about promoting.
That is your time, but I do want to ask, you talked about We the People, and Vermont is very diverse. What does We the People mean to you, and how do you plan to represent all of Vermont as the promoter?
Everybody, you know, to me, We the People is everyone, every group, every class, people with ideas, having conversations, talking, listening. I've been on a listening tour, and I've listened to a lot of people over the last year or so, and I will continue to do that as the next lieutenant governor, as the 84th lieutenant governor, and promoting Rutland. I'm a very positive person, and I enjoy meeting people and working with people and getting their ideas. There's a lot of great resources out there, and that's what we need to do. We need to build on those systems and strengthen them and make them better for all Vermonters, all the people. To me, it's common sense government, with a heart.
Former President Donald Trump has been a polarizing figure within the Republican Party. Some members of the state party have denounced Trump and condemned his baseless claims that the 2020 presidential election was stolen. Election officials and state and federal judges have all found these claims unsupported by any evidence. But others see former President Trump as a leader of your party and have amplified his claims of election fraud. Which of these camps do you fall into, and how do you see yourself and other members of that camp playing a role in Vermont politics going forward? Gregory Thayer, let's start with you.
Thank you. I support President Trump. I wasn't an initial supporter. I was a Scott Walker guy, and I became after Mr. Walker left the race, and I waited for the convention to whom our nominee would be. Mr. Trump was the nominee. I supported him. I appreciate and like a lot of the policies. I can't name probably one that I didn't agree with. And I supported my president, and I worked for him, and I did different things, different events for him. I support the election is over. It was won by Joe Benning. Mr. Benning's our president. It was won by Mr. Biden. And we move forward to 2022, 2024. And there's a movie out there called 2000 Mules. I think people ought to watch that because I think there is some good evidence in there. Thank you.
So I do want to make two points. 2000 Mules is a documentary that claims to present proof of widespread and illegal ballot harvesting in the 2020 presidential election. The claims made in that film have been rejected by election officials, and former Trump attorney General Bill Barr said that the film's premise is, quote, indefensible. So using that movie as an example, why should people believe this movie if even President Trump doesn't, his attorney general didn't support that?
Everybody's entitled to their own opinion based on what they're viewing and their own systems of belief. I support a lot of what was promoted and pushed that came out in that movie. And I've seen some of those reports. I don't know if I really agree with them. From what I've seen, I don't. I do feel that there was something went on. I think we at least, Mr. Cyrus, is we have to learn from it.
I want to also ask you, Gregory Thayer, you told Vermont Digger in February that you were, quote, happy and proud to be in Washington on January 6, 2021, in support of President Trump's false claims of election fraud. You told Digger that you personally doubt the 2020 election results. This week, the House January 6 committee hearings heard from Trump's attorney, General Bill Barr, who described the president's claims as, quote, detached from reality. Has your thoughts on January 6th changed after witnessing and seeing these hearings?
No, not at all. There's a lot of stuff missing from those hearings. You know, they're not talking to Nancy Pelosi. They're not talking to the Capitol Hill police chief. They're not talking to the D.C. police chief. You know, there's a lot of stuff missing. I personally don't agree with what's going on there. I condemn the people that went into the building. I was there. I'm glad I was there. I was proud to be there, standing up for our Constitution and our president. But I did not go into the house. I did see a person have a heart attack and die. And I heard the cops say, go around the back.
That is your time. Mr. Benning.
Connor, I don't know where to begin. First off, I'll say I did not vote for Donald Trump. I will sympathize to some extent with those who did, because for a very long time, there is a certain segment of the population that has felt disenfranchised from what's going on in the United States of America. However, I believe that the Republican Party should be led by someone with civility and integrity, somebody who can get along with people, and someone who doesn't use that pulpit as a bully pulpit to try to force people to their way of thinking. It became very clear to me as a lawyer, after listening to all of the conversations after the election about what evidence was going to be presented, and then after 64 separate court cases, including the United States Supreme Court, there wasn't any, that his continued claims are indefensible. And I wish our party would get back to a point where we understand our core values and give up and move forward to 2024 to present them.
Senator Benning, your opponent is describing a view of your party and its principles that counters what you say the party stands for and should stand for. So when people are casting their votes on August 9th, why should they vote for what you stand for and not what Mr. Meyer? No, not Meyer. Thayer.
Very simply, I believe, first, the office that I'm running for is an integral part of Vermont, and I want to be able to use that platform to bring the Republican Party back into relevance in conversations around the state. Our five core values are pretty simple: individual liberty, personal responsibility, an educational system that gets our graduates to compete in a global marketplace, a free market economy, and less government based on lower taxes. Those are pretty simple, and they're all bound together by a constitution. Those principles need to be part of the conversation at the table, and I want to be able to use that platform to do so.
I want to move on to our next topic. Vermont is one of the whitest states in the country, and many believe diversity, equity, and inclusion, also known as DEI, should be at the forefront of creating equity. Given there are so few BIPOC, that's Black, Indigenous, people of color, what's one way you, as Lieutenant Governor, would advocate to address the needs of the BIPOC community? Mr. Benning, we'll start with you.
Well, let's start with my past. I'm a past chairman of the Vermont Human Rights Commission. We started, during my time frame there, getting data to demonstrate that there was actually a problem in the BIPOC community's treatment by law enforcement officers. That process continues, and I'm very glad to see that law enforcement has joined on board with that discussion. We have a lot of things that are going on right now in the legislature trying to address diversity training. Our schools are in the same category right now. Those things are needed conversations. That's not to say that every Vermont person who is a white person is racist or anything else. It's a part of the conversation of history that we need to deal with and talk about. I'm proud to say that this coming Saturday, I'll be down in Windsor dedicating our newest green and gold roadside historical marker to Dinah, a slave who was held by a judge in Vermont after we had passed a constitutional amendment saying no slavery here.
Mr. Benning, I want to ask you, where do you think the conversation needs to start or continue with you as Lieutenant Governor?
Well, it would start in my office. It has been going on for some time, but literally, if I took over this particular office, anybody walking through the west doors of the State House is immediately confronted by the Lieutenant Governor's office door. If I'm elected to the Lieutenant Governor's position, that door will remain open. It is a place where people can poke their heads in and say, hi, and then I would look up and I would say, where are you from? what can I do for you? Have you ever had a tour of this state house? I'd be glad to give you one. I want to make that office a place where people can feel comfortable immediately walking in the door, no matter their skin color, no matter their religion, no matter their political views. I have given tours of that building to virtually everybody from every faction of life, and I would use this podium as the great place to do that.
Mr. Thayer, I want to go to you. As Lieutenant Governor, how would you use that position to advocate the needs of the BIPOC community?
Well, I think it all starts, Connor, with respect. A lot of it is self-respect, respecting yourself to be able to respect others. But everyone has a voice. America has a tremendous amount of opportunities for people, all people. I just believe people got to go and get them. They're there. Go get them. And I would work with, I can work with anybody around, you know, any issue. And I'm always open to listen and meet with people and talk to people. When I'm elected, I'm going to consider hiring Mr. Benning to be my tour guide at the State House because he knows the house and its makeup very well. I'm going to be out there looking to create jobs and making life better for every Vermonter and doing the things that I need to do as a lieutenant governor. My door is always open for whatever reason. And I will just work hard for the people every day. And again, and lastly, it's about we the people.
You have spent the last year touring the state in what you called a critical race theory tour. What did you hope to accomplish by doing this?
That started, as town halls on critical race theory. And the goal was to talk to people, listen to people, and to hear what's going on in their schools. We brought various speakers in, some from the local community, some that had maybe a statewide presence with knowledge about the subject matter. And we talked and we listened. And we were drawn, 100, 150 people. And I think it went really, really well. I'm really proud of what we did in talking and listening to people about what's going on in their local schools. And we heard some serious stories, some sad stories of mistreatment on both white and black children, students. And again, it goes back to me, respect and, listening to everybody.
I want to give you 30 seconds to answer a follow-up to this, which is, what did you learn on this tour? And, critical race theory is a very divisive topic, and I think a lot of people approach it very powerfully and very emotionally. So I just want to get an idea of what you learned.
Well, I learned some of the things that are going on in our schools, teaching about pronouns and white students, and black students, what their relationship is with the police department. Have they ever had any situations with the police? Does the police make them feel inferior? Different things like that. A lot of people had issues with the BLM flag because of, not that they don't support the black community, it's because of what BLM represents. And we've seen a lot coming out about BLM in the last couple months.
We're gonna move on. So right now, Republican Phil Scott is Vermont's governor. He's running for a fourth term this year, and he could be the person the next lieutenant governor would have to work with. Some call him a moderate Republican. So the question is, what's one area in which you'd be an ally with a moderate like Phil Scott? And what's one area you'd see the biggest difference between yourself and somebody like Phil Scott? Gregory Thayer, let's start with you.
I think the ally would definitely be in the Global Warming Solutions Act. Governor Scott and myself know that how that will hurt and negatively affect every Vermonter, but especially low-income or working Vermonters. And it's not a good bill. It was rushed into, and I don't believe that it's going to help. I'm not a big environmental control guy. I think, we need to take care of our environment like we do with clean water, clean air. We all live, work, and play in this environment, so we want it clean and safe for us and our family. Where we would probably be at odds would be the budget, I think. I think the budget, and remember, every bill that's voted on during the legislative session that goes into the budget, you can vote no for the for those bills and on the floor. But when the budget bill, if you vote yes, you've actually supported that bill. So we'd have some, we'd work there.
That's, unfortunately, that's your time. So Governor Scott has only ever had a lieutenant governor aside his party. Sitting Lieutenant Governor Molly Gray is a Democrat, and previously Scott has progressive Democrat David Zuckerman. Does it help or harm the state to have a lieutenant governor of a different party than the sitting governor? Thayer, that's your question.
I think it's better to in the same party, but I understand our six constitutional offices, and so they don't run together; they run independently. You know, we heard some stories last night from Mr. Zuckerman about his no relationship with Governor Scott, and told that he wouldn't be in on the conversations. You know, I hope the governor would listen to me or any Democrat, because I think our voices are important, and it's so important to be respectful and to listen to all Vermonters. Thank you.
And for people watching and listening, that was the Digger debate that happened yesterday. I want to hear from Mr. Benning. What's one area you see the biggest where you'd be an ally for with Governor Scott? And what's one area that you would maybe have differences on?
First off, I've known Phil Scott for 12 years now. I know not just his administrative team, but also his campaign team. I've actually gone around the state with his campaign team, and I have worked on a daily basis with a good chunk of his administrative team. I would be an ally in his thoughts about this state having an affordability crisis. It is definitely something that we are still facing and are about to face even worse as we face rising costs of gasoline. There are things that are coming down the pike at us that are going to require people who are responding to that in a legislative sense with common sense and understanding about what the real Vermonter is actually facing. I will say that my biggest difference I've come across with him so far, he signed a gun bill that I didn't particularly like, but more importantly for the current times, he was asked a question the other day on a radio interview whether he knew what the Council of Censors was. And the Council of Censors was a function of Vermont's government when we were a republic. He didn't know the answer, so I want to work on his history skills.
So you just mentioned his stance on gun control and how he did help pass legislation for that. If you were called to fill the role of governor, would you reverse any of these policies that you didn't necessarily agree with the governor on?
I'm not really prepared to reverse them. I think that they have been passed and they need a little bit of time to see if they are actually working. Should there come a day when we realize they are not working, I wouldn't hesitate to take a double look and say, you know, this was based on a constitutional infringement to some extent. And trying to get back to the original intent of the Constitution is always important for me. But right now, those pieces of legislation are in place. They are being given a chance to work out through the system, especially with police. And I would probably not jump right in and say we've got to repeal X, Y, or Z.
I want to follow up. What gun law would you say is an infringement?
When you place an obstacle in front of someone's right to be able to exercise that right, you have technically infringed upon even the outer edges of a constitutional provision. We all have a right to drive a car if we can pass the test. But that's much different than gun ownership, which is literally in our Constitution. The difference between those two things is something I'm sworn to protect, that Constitution.
Let's move on. The most significant climate change bill in Montpelier this year, the Clean Heat Standard, failed in the legislature. The bill aimed to cut emissions from heating buildings, and it would have transformed how people who sell fuels like propane operate their businesses. The bill passed the House and the Senate with strong support, but Governor Scott vetoed it, and efforts to override that veto failed in the House by a single vote. So here's the question. If you were in charge with casting a vote, the tie-breaking vote, on the Clean Heat Standard in the Senate, how would you vote and why? Senator Benning, let's start with you.
Well, I've already done that. I cast a negative vote on the Clean Heating Standard as well as the Global Warming Solutions Act, which was its progenitor. The bottom line is this. When you're trying to deal with climate change, you have to use the appropriate tool in doing so. And I didn't see it as appropriate at all that the legislature was sending off to an unelected group of officials the ability to make statements about what Vermonters had to do. There was no recourse if Vermonters ran afoul of that and found themselves wanting some kind of a remedy. In addition to which, we were providing every citizen of the state the ability to sue the state if we didn't meet what were now mandates as opposed to what were previously goals. I believe Vermont has a responsibility to react to climate change in a way that makes sense and that we can afford and that actually has an impact on what we're trying to do. I did not see either the Clean Heat Standard or the Global Warming Solutions Act as part of that.
What is an appropriate tool to for Vermonters and Vermont to begin to address climate change?
First off, the population of the state is 640,000 people. If they were to disappear tomorrow, the carbon impact would be scientifically zero. So what are we able to do with the limited resources that we have for the small population that exists here? My first response is we have to become resilient to what's coming down the pipe. We do not have the ability as a population this small to change what's coming down from climate change perspectives. So we've got to be resilient in moving forward. What can we do to weatherize every home in the state? What can we do to support the people who are not going to be able to afford some of the high fuel prices that are coming down the pike immediately? Those are things we can do and should be doing to address climate change.
Gregory Thayer, if you were in charge of casting the tie-breaking vote on the Clean Heat Standard in the Senate, how would you vote and why? It's kind of elaborating on what you said earlier.
Yeah, thank you. I would vote no, and I would have voted no on the Global Warming Solutions Act as well the prior year. I think that this has all been a rush to putting together. I don't think they really looked at the entire picture and the effects, the unintended consequences of this bill and also the Clean Heat bill, and also some modern working on Act 250, creating another whole board. The whole thing about these unelected boards setting policy, I personally feel that the Democratic leadership is kicking the can down the road by setting up all these different commissions and not voting and taking this, straight on, head on to the people and listening to the people. I don't believe that, the Vermont legislature doesn't represent Vermont. It represents the voting populace of Vermont.
That's your time. And I want to ask two questions. What are the unintended consequences, and how do you make claims that the Vermont legislature, who's voted by Vermonters, doesn't represent Vermont when all Vermonters have an opportunity to vote?
Exactly. Great. That's a great question. What was the first part of that?
What are the unintended consequences?
Unintended consequences is what this bill, especially the home heating standards bill, what it would do to low-income Vermonters, what it would do to all Vermonters and businesses, what's going on with construction. We have a serious, serious, serious housing problem, and the regulations that are employed in the state and state government, it makes it almost impossible to build, renovate, construct anything. And going to the second part of that question is...
That was all Vermonters can vote. So how does the Vermont legislature not represent the people?
I think that they represent the voting the people who vote. They don't represent the whole state because so many people don't vote because I think they're just so disenchanted with what's going on up there.
The candidates will now have an opportunity to ask each other questions. The question should be no longer than 30 seconds, and the responses are limited to 60 seconds. As a reminder, candidates, you are allowed to ask brief follow-up questions. Let's start with Gregory. Let's start with Gregory Thayer.
Thank you. Currently, gas prices, Mr. Benning, are over $5, about $6.50 for diesel. Supply chains are negatively affected by this. food is more expensive, medicine, going out to dinner, everyday life is expensive for Vermonters. Have you ever voted to raise or increase the Vermont tax on gasoline at the pump and at the home heating for Vermonters?
Greg, there's no specific bill that is solely attacking just that component. If there was a transportation bill that came along, which covers all of our bridges and highways, and embedded in that somewhere was a gas tax increase, I may very well have voted for it simply because I realized that might have been something bitter to swallow, but we had more important issues with crumbling bridges and roads. But there has never, to my knowledge, been a vote taken on just an increase in the gas tax. It cost me $96 to fill my rig to get here today. Believe me, I know and understand what's going on with the gas situation, and the folks who are around my neck of the woods who rely very much on diesel for their farm instruments, and the truckers who take things from every part of the state to Lindenville, everybody is having an impact on that. And I think one of the first things we have to pay attention to is getting those taxes stabilized.
Gregory Thayer, do you have a follow-up?
No, I'm all set. Thank you.
Joe Benning, it's time for your question.
Greg, honesty, transparency, and the rule of law are very important to me, which is why I believe my colleagues elected me to be chair of the Senate Ethics Panel. And I take that job very seriously. Statewide candidates, as you know, are required to submit a financial disclosure application, and embedded in that is you are expected to produce a copy of your 1040 form. This is yours, and everything has been struck with the black magic marker. Is that honesty and transparency, and does the rule of law actually apply to you?
Oh, of course it applies to me. I live within the law every day, and I take it very seriously. I was given advice to do it that way, to blacken out. And I even asked the folks at the Secretary of State's office, they said, it's fine. So I just followed how I was instructed by some people and verified or okay with the Secretary of State's office. Thank you.
So as a follow-up, I'd like to know who those people were and what person in the Secretary of State's office advised you it was acceptable to file a 1040 form that was completely redacted.
I'm not going to release the personal people who told me that, but I, you know, the gentleman that received the papers, JP, JD?
His name is JP Isabel?
Isabel, yeah.
Is it your testimony here, if you will, that JP Isabel asked you or told you that it was acceptable to file a 1040 form all redacted?
Well, first of all, I'm not on trial, so I'm going to leave it right there. Thank you.
Thayer, would you like to ask Joe Benning another question?
Oh, yes, thank you. So, Mr. Benning, I do not support Prop 5, Article 22, which will be on the ballot this coming November 8th for the people to vote on. I don't believe we need to enshrine abortion in our Constitution. We already have abortions up until minutes before birth, promulgated by statute, by the legislature and signed by the governor. I believe that our legislature, including yourself, sir, abdicated your responsibility under a constitutional republic to vote on that.
Can you get to your question, please?
And hiding behind the voters. What about parental responsibility? Do you believe in parents' rights? Because this bill does not protect parents' rights because it says everyone, not just adults.
Joe Benning, it's your chance to answer the question.
First off, I do believe in parental rights because I've spent the bulk of my legal career fighting to protect those parental rights, and I don't believe Prop 5 has anything to do with parental rights. This is for every single individual to have their personal reproductive autonomy and shredded in the Constitution as a right of privacy, which I very much believe in. And in my Republican experience, the concept of individual liberty has substance. Prop 5, in my eyes, protects that. One other reason that I voted for it, I knew that a proposition to the Constitution like this is submitted to the people. Those very the people that you keep describing as somebody that you are interested in. The people have a right to weigh in on a question of this magnitude. I'm not advocating one way or the other for that proposition. I will vote my conscience, and I believe every Vermonter should have that right.
Larry, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. A quick follow-up. Do you really think that that people are going to understand that language? I mean, there's some legal opinions out there talking about personal autonomy that the average person is not going to understand. This language is very short, and it's a run-on sentence almost, and they're not going to understand it.
Well, Greg, if you've read the language, you would know it comes directly from the case of Roe versus Wade. And we've had 50 years worth of jurisprudence around the term compelling state interest. That's why that language is in there. Several people in the legislature had conversations about how to approach this subject, and everyone agreed it should be directly in the attempt to protect the concepts behind Roe versus Wade.
Did you write the language?
That's time. You get one follow-up. We're going to go to Mr. Betting, and he's going to ask his question to Mr. Thayer.
I'll start my question by saying, no, I did not write that language. Greg, you have proclaimed yourself to be a constitutionalist. And as we've all heard, you were in the Capitol on January 6th. The president of the Senate, who is the vice president of the United States, has one sentence applied to him in the United States Constitution when it comes time to ask for votes. And it says, the president of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all certificates, and the votes shall be counted. Do you believe in 2024, Kamala Harris should have the power to single-handedly decide what votes to count?
Well, no, of course I don't. But I think this was a lot different because a lot of the allegations that were going on. You know, I do love our Constitution, and I support it and don't want to see it assaulted or wrecked by the legislature here in Vermont and our Vermont Constitution as well. I do not believe she has the right just to arbitrarily do that. But in a process where there's questions or issues, then I do. I think that some of those ballots, some of those envelopes probably shouldn't have been opened.
So you believe that Kamala Harris has the right? I'm sorry, Kamala Harris does not have the right, but Mike Pence did have a right and an obligation to violate the Constitution.
Based on everything that was going on after the 2020 election, I believe that there was grounds for Michael Pence to maybe look at it differently. But we respect what Vice President Pence did. He's certified, and we move on. And I've been pretty, even in that article in Vermont Digger, I said it's time to move on. Joe Biden is our president, and we need to move on and work for 2022, 2024.
Speaking of moving on, this concludes the second segment of our program. It's now time for some questions submitted by Vermonters, and I just want to say thank you to everyone who has submitted questions. Just a reminder, candidates, please limit your answers to 30 seconds. Now, our first question is submitted by Gabe in Burlington. They ask, addressing climate change is a critical challenge to our future, but like many issues, it's become caught up in the culture wars and political division that get in the way of progress. How will you overcome the politics of division to make progress on climate change? How will you bring people together? Senator Benning, we'll start with you.
Well, I've already said that the best way for Vermont to approach the climate change issue, due to its small population and its limited resources, is to start by making people resilient to the weather changes that are coming. I do not see the office of Lieutenant Governor as being a place that I can get much farther than that, because this really is a national conversation. And the folks who are in the State House don't have anywhere near the same kind of power, for instance, to tell Toyota and Ford they have to have X number of electric vehicles by a given date.
Gregory Thayer, your turn.
Thanks for the question, Gabe. My thing is about listening and talking to people and hearing what they say. I don't agree. Sounds like I probably don't agree with Senator Benning on some of the science that's out there. We have clean air, we have clean water, we have clean environment. We all live, work, and play in it. I think we take steps. We've done things, and I think we need
Thank
to continue.
Thank you for that response. We do have to stick to time. Rebecca in Burlington asks, do you support any special legislation, the Vermont legislature, to pass additional gun control laws this Do you support a special session of the Vermont legislature to pass additional gun control laws this month? Do you support an assault weapons ban? Gregory Thayer, we'll start with you.
No, I do not. And in some parts, I think there may be too many gun laws. I think we need to enforce what we have on the books. And you talk about an assault weapon. There's no such thing as an assault weapon. The assault is an action by an individual. The assault is not the gun. Any gun, any knife. My pen could be an assault pen. So, no, I do not. Sorry about that. I do not support any more gun regulation. I think it's about educating our people, and I think children need to be educated.
Senator Benning, your turn to respond.
Connor, could you repeat the question? Because I think I heard two questions.
Do you support a special session of the Vermont legislature to pass additional gun control laws this month? Do you support an assault weapons ban?
Okay, so the first part of the question deals with a special session. The answer is no. It costs a great deal of money to assemble a special session of the legislature. Secondly, the only thing that I would support at this time, now that we have already passed several gun pieces of legislation, is to get the players together. The gun rights folks, the folks who are concerned and want to restrict gun rights, and a third leg on a three-legged stool.
You do have
stool.
To move on.
I understand.
Matthew in Aalborg asks, accessible services for government operations are limited in Vermont for those with disabilities. How would you make government services accessible to everyone who needs them? Senator Benning, we'll start with you.
Well, I would point back to my role as the chair of the Human Rights Commission, where we dealt with these issues on a daily basis. Every time we are presented with a case, and it really is a case-by-case basis to determine the extent of what is in the way of somebody who has a disability. But there are global issues in disability rights thoughts that we really also need to be addressing, and I frankly think Vermont is doing a pretty good job at doing that.
Gregory Thayer, your turn to respond.
When I was on the city council, the board, they appointed me to run the committee that would go around the city and look at different obstacles for folks with disabilities, handicaps, and nobody had ever really done anything with it. I did. I met with Dave Sagge, who ran a Vermont office in the Bloomer building, and we walked around the city, went around the city, talked to people, and we made some recommendations, and a lot of things were happening in Rutland. So I'm definitely open
to
the idea.
Thank you for that response. Kate in Shelburne asks, how will you approach growing Vermont's infrastructure to allow for our state to attract young professionals? Please give details beyond talking about broadband and include specifics around housing, cost of living, and attracting diverse folks. Gregory Thayer, we're going to start with you. 30 seconds.
Thank you. First, I think we need to cure our housing problem. We've got some serious problems, and I believe that a lot of those are tied up in Act 250, and we need to open it up and let builders build and let construction people do their work. And yes, we need some regulations, but we also need to reach out to people. We need to market Vermont like I did in Rutland with the Market Rutland initiative and go out and attract people. Vermont's beautiful.
Senator Benning.
You know, Connor, and to the person who asked the question, I want to give my first specific that I'm very proud of. As chair of the Senate Institutions Committee, right now, today, if you drive down Route 15, you're going to be seeing a number of infrastructure projects that are taking place on the Lamoille Valley Rail Trail. That kind of activity in this state is what's drawing people in. And I'm very proud to say it was my committee that made sure the money for the completion of that project was put into the Capitol bill. Take a trip down Route 15, you'll see exactly what I mean.
So we do have time for a brief lightning round before the end of the debate. So candidates, please keep your answer short. 10 seconds or less, I will be very strict on time. Our first question, how would you describe the Scott administration's COVID response? Senator Benning, we'll start with you.
Stellar.
Gregory Thayer.
I think a little overburdened. We're closing businesses.
And then another, moving on, have you gotten a COVID-19 vaccine? Why or why not? Gregory Thayer, let's start with you.
I'm not going to release my HIPAA.
Okay. I just want to ask one more time, have you gotten a COVID vaccine?
Declined to answer. Not going to, it's my personal.
Okay, we'll move on. Joe Benning.
I couldn't get into this studio without having had the vaccine. I've had my share of Moderna as well as booster. And that was my choice. I respect people's choices.
That's time. Moving on, what do you think is the top issue facing Vermonters today? Senator Benning, we'll start with you.
It's the same issue that Phil Scott originally brought to our attention several years ago when he first ran, affordability.
Gregory Thayer.
Affordability. And the legislature is trying to do way too much, trying to be all things to all people. We need personal responsibility. And we need to listen to each other with we the people. Thank you.
Where and how do you consume your news? Gregory Thayer, we'll start with you.
I get my news from a couple different sources. The Rutland Herald, the Burlington Free Press, Vermont Digger, Daily Chronicles, True North, Fox News, CNN.
Time. Senator Benning.
When I wake up in the morning, I wake up to VPR. I go to my computer, and the first thing in the morning, I'm on Fox, CBS, and there's another one I've forgotten.
That's time. How much confidence do you have in this state's elections? Senator Benning, we'll start with you.
I have every confidence in this state's elections, and I know so do the town clerks who perform that function.
Gregory Thayer.
We have probably the best town clerk in the state in Henry Heck and Rutland, and I trust Henry. I trust the town clerks, and I believe they're working hard to do the right thing.
That's time.
Little concern.
Do you own a gun? We'll start with you, Gregory Thayer.
I do not own a gun. I support gun ownership 100%. My children became gun owners by taking the courses first. I just haven't done that, but I do support. I was never exposed to it as a child.
Joe Benning, do you own a gun?
I did not own a gun until fairly recently when my brother-in-law gave to me his father's antique shotgun. So I have to say, yes, I have a gun, but not a working gun.
Should the U.S. Supreme Court overturn Roe versus Wade? Senator Benning, we'll start with you.
My preference would have been no, because it kept the peace in this country for 50 years, and I think that the most recent appointees to the Supreme Court made it clear that was the law of the land, and I'm disappointed that that might actually happen.
Gregory Thayer.
I support it coming back to the states for states' rights under the 10th Amendment. I also, I understand that when that was passed in 73, it was a 7-2 split.
Do you think Vermont is a welcoming place for minorities? Gregory Thayer, we'll start with you.
I do, because we have so much to offer people. I really do. And again, it's about going after the opportunities. They're there. You got to go get them and just work hard.
Senator Benning.
Connor, I cannot answer that question because I'm not a person of color, but I have listened to a lot of people of color, and I am concerned that they have a different impression of what I do about Vermont being a welcoming place.
What role, if any, does faith play in your policy positions? Senator Benning, we'll start with you.
I've made the observation that I much prefer the house of man as built by God to any house of God built by man. I believe we have the capacity to
Gregory Thayer.
I'm a practicing Catholic. I go to church very, very a lot. And I love God. I love Jesus Christ. And I'm a Vermont patriot.
So it's time now for 1 minute closing statements from each candidate. The order was determined randomly before the show. And the Senator Benning, you'll start us off.
Thank you. First, I want to say thank you for everybody here at putting on this event. It is important for the people of Vermont to know what's happening in their state. And while the lieutenant governor's position is considered ceremonial by many, that is no way I would ever treat that office. I look forward to the opportunity to be a promoter of all things Vermont. I look forward to the opportunity to help Phil Scott continue the journey that he has been on. I look forward to being able to meet as many people as possible to talk about why Vermont is a great place. These green hills and silver waters are extremely important to me, and I want to do everything I can to make sure they maintain for our future generations. It is an honor and a privilege to have been elected 6 times to the State Senate. I thank the citizens of the Caledonia County District for that opportunity, and I hope to be able to serve again statewide in the Lieutenant Governor's position.
Gregory Thayer, your closing statements, please.
Thank you. Thank you, VPR, for putting this together, and Michael and everybody. I also want to thank you, Connor, and Mr. Benning for being here with me. I thank the people who are running for public office throughout the state, because it's people like you that make Vermont a great place. I am running for Lieutenant Governor because I have the experience and the heart to represent all Vermonters across the political spectrum. I love Vermont. I was born and raised here and proud of it. My campaign is about we the people, a common sense approach to governing, putting the people in charge first, not special interest organization. Our state budget is out of control. Government cannot be all things to all people. We need personal responsibility. Our nation is found on the premise of we the people, not the government. I am not looking for politicians' endorsements. I'm looking for the people, we the people, the common people like me. Thank you. God bless you all. I'm Gregory Thayer, candidate for Vermont Lieutenant Governor. Thank you.
This concludes the primary election debate for Republicans running for Lieutenant Governor on VPR Vermont PBS. Thank you to the candidates who joined us today. That's Senator Joe Benning of Lindenville and Gregory Thayer of Rutland. Join us for our next debate. That's next week on Wednesday, June 22nd, where my co-host, Michaela LaFrac, will moderate a debate with the Democratic candidates for Lieutenant Governor. The VPR Vermont PBS debates are produced by Matthew Smith, Tedra Meyer, Brian Stevenson, Holt Albee, Mike Dunn, David Rice, Frank Allwine, Peter Engish, and Jen Jarecki. Our music is produced by Eric Ewazen and the New Trombone Collective. I'm Connor Cyrus. I appreciate you being here, and we'll talk again soon.